welcome to the Utah Royals FC show. My name is Lucas Muller, and this is my third try to get this right. This is episode 114, where we are going to discuss Utah Royals' historic, massive, unexpected, unprecedented win over the North Carolina Courage. In this episode, we'll also recap the, preview the upcoming game against the Washington Spirit. I'm joined by Virgil Leonard and Cindy Laura, how are you guys today?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Virgil? Staying alive.
Yeah. Staying alive.
That's good.
Great. Staying alive.
guys, there's a game where the Royals were not expected to win. And they did. It was really fun. Virgil, what were your overall thoughts on the game before we delve into kind of the specifics?
I was super stoked and very pleasantly surprised. I know we talked last week just about how good a team the Courage are and how kind of we're still trying to suss out and like understand what the Royals are going to look like, both in terms of tactics and starting composition and all that stuff. And I think on paper, theoretically, this is a game that the Royals probably should not have won. But that's why they play the game, right? That's why it's the beautiful game, because anything can happen and, you know, great things do sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like a game where if they play that 10 times, they probably don't win it 7 at least of those times, you know. Cindy, do you have any thoughts on just maybe what a victory like this means to the team?
It's huge. It's a huge, confidence boost. When I was writing the preview last week, Utah was actually, I know that they lost the first game against Chicago, but stats-wise, and I know that we said that, like, you don't win these games on paper, but, like, the fact that Utah played such a possession, yeah, they had so much possession in the first game, and I think led in the league for that stat, and then, like, I believe passing accuracy. So I think we overlooked that just because they lost, you know, like, because we talk, I'm like, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't win. And I haven't really looked at the stats for this upcoming game, and that's probably something we can look at as we talk. But yeah, I think we might have underestimated this Utah team because of their youth and inexperience. So like Virgil said, like, pleasantly surprised, and I was not able to fully watch the game, but I was following on my phone and I was like, whoa, Utah's going to win. Whoa. So yeah.
One of the things that I was surprised by is all three goals were limited to the first third of the game. There was not a goal after the 30th minute. Cause it felt super open that first bit of the game, and then there are obviously still other chances, like especially the two penalties were super nerve-wracking, but on the whole the game was definitely a little bit more compact in the second half and the back end of the first half.
Yeah, I think, like, being there, I felt like especially the second half, everything was totally locked down and it was just wave after wave of Courage attackers. And there were some decent chances for the Royals. One that they probably should have scored on. One that they did score on. And Nyberg fouled the keeper. And so that was called back. I think it was Nyberg. Talking about stats, it is funny that first game Royals led in basically every single stat other than goals scored. And then in this one, they were behind in every single stat except for goals scored. I mean, they took two shots. Of those two shots, two of them were on were shots on goal. Of those, they all went in, and that's what got them the winner, which is just wild. North Carolina had 17 shots. And interestingly, at the during the post-match, that number was 18, so they took one of their shots away at some point. But yeah, North Carolina absolutely dominated possession. They were at 67.3% possession. And I think the commentator said that they have led in the possession stat and had led in the possession stat in every game in 2023 and now every game in 2024, which is pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, it felt like Utah definitely had some good chances. But unlike the first game where it seemed like they were largely in the driver's seat, they were certainly the passengers in this one. So let's look at the goals. First goal comes in the 15th minute. It's a Paige Monahan corner. She sends it into the box. And recent podcast guest, Kate Del Fava, is in the box. She just takes a few steps back, basically, to create some space for herself. Her defender doesn't follow her at all, and she heads it into goal. Took it perfectly, read it perfectly. Good delivery by Paige, the captain. Do you guys have any thoughts about just what it... Sean Walker of KSL had a really good question in the post-match of, does it kind of make it extra meaningful that the first goal scorer of for Royals 2.0 was someone who was on the team in 2020? What do you guys think about that?
I think it's awesome. I think it's, if you could write up a scenario, I think that would be the one for the first goal. Mm-hmm. And it was a good goal too. Like, something that I tweeted about is, you know, goal one was that awesome goal from Gunny all those years ago. And then for goal two to be like a header like that, obviously being connected to the first iteration of the team. Yeah, I think that is like a dream scenario, especially for me who, like, psychologically, I just love that nostalgia train.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same. Yeah, maybe there was a bit of luck because she was on the podcast. So, yeah.
Come on the podcast.
Yeah, come.
Yeah, if you're looking to score goals for the Utah Royals, you know, our DMs are open. So let us know. We can pencil you.
Yeah.
In.
It's worth noting this is not a one time event. Mm-mm. Either. Brittany Ratcliffe did the same thing.
Yeah.
Was that also? Was that the goal against North Carolina Courage?
I think so.
No, it wasn't. Was it that huge one? Was it the screamer? I feel like it was too early in the season. I feel like it was a different one. But maybe it was. Maybe it was.
I feel like we should take credit for that goal. The one loss the Courage had that whole season. It'd be pretty poetic that the first loss that they have in this season would be from us. Us directly. Yeah. How incredible is that? Good job, guys. We did it.
We did it. I think it's meaningful in that, yes, it is Kate Del Fava, a player that came back, you know, 2.0 Royals. But just how much she has grown as a player, because she's no longer the rookie that Utah drafted. You know, she has had... I mean, 2020, do we count it as a year? Yeah, we do. Even though it was an odd one. But then the next few years, she's in Kansas City, and she just becomes a starter, becomes such a huge part of that team. And now she's a part of the Royals as, like, one of the most experienced players. And she's still fairly young. And
she's 25, yeah, she's 20. And is the oldest person on the team. That's not true. She is
she's one of the older people on the team for sure, which is wild.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really cool to see someone who was drafted and then is now such a leader and so experienced, and it was cool.
For sure, for sure. My favorite part of that game for sure was a Sentinel Screamer. Like, that was beautiful. That was great. I think we are going to have many of those over the coming years, hopefully. Like, don't bookmark it, but national team picture. Don't bookmark it yet.
Why not? I think a lot of people want that, and that seems a pretty common path for the number one pick.
Yeah. Because my last hot take was that the Royals would lose 4-1.
He's just trying to make up for his bad prediction now.
Yeah. I'm trying to put good juju in the air by ironically putting bad energy.
Yeah. I mean, we were pretty, not that we were like, we just were like kind of in a, oh man, it's going to be a rough year because of that first game. And then they win and they're like, oh my goodness, they're going to win the NWSL championship.
Yeah. And they won that second game fast. I know we briefly mentioned this in the last episode, but it took them until game six to win last iteration. So that's a lot of happy fans a lot sooner in the season, which I'm really stoked about.
Yeah, I remember you brought that up last week, and I felt so relieved that they won this game to not be like,
yeah,
we just have to have this dragged out for weeks and weeks. Like, that's six games is a long time. We were talking about this in the post-match before, like, the coaches and players came in. Does anyone remember Utah Royals' second ever game? Who it was against, what the scoreline was? I'll be so impressed. What's that?
Houston Dash 0-0.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's right. Good job. 2018.
That's great.
Let me fact check him.
No, he's right.
Nice.
Because I had looked it up and we were talking about, you know, that Orlando game in 2018 where the, you know, egregious Becky Sobran handball. And no one could remember the second game because it was so forgettable.
Okay.
Unless you're Virginia, and it's locked in.
Remember all things.
I'm not saying I'm Rain Man, but I might be Rain Man.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Sanchez goal. Because it made for a compelling narrative, right? Oh, they go up early. Oh, maybe that was a fluke. Ashley Sanchez gets a decent goal in that they were applying good pressure. Utah was not defending super great, I would say. It felt like maybe more of the midfielders should have come back to defend because it was like a line of Utah defenders and then a line of Courage attackers, and there just was too much space in the box. And, you know, the cross comes in. They tried to clear. It's not a great connection. And then it falls right to Ashley Sanchez. And, you know, that's the person you don't super want to have the ball at her feet, right in front of the box, right in front of the goal. And so she takes, just a right-footed shot, puts it in the left corner. And Hot just has no chance to save that. I don't feel like she made any mistake. It feels like more of a defensive breakdown. Is that just how the ball falls, or is that a bigger issue for the team?
Might be a little bit of both, but like, this team's so young. They're so new. Like, even I know the back line is more experienced technically, but like, those things are going to happen. And I think I'm frankly okay with them happening as long as they don't happen a lot. Right. But
yeah.
I mean, it was also like Ashley Sanchez is an incredible player. So I'm not super overly concerned about it.
I mean, notable, they didn't concede another goal after that. Yeah. They learned from that mistake.
Yeah.
And
what an amazing 10 seconds of game time. I know, obviously, with the setup and everything, but between the penalties, like, I know we briefly mentioned that, but like, that was wild.
Yeah, let's talk about the Sentinel goal, and then maybe we can jump to the dual pins.
Yeah,
I mean, she was a number one draft pick. I feel like it was for a reason. I don't remember. Someone slid, basically. Maybe not slid, but wins the ball back, passes it to Sintner, and she just carries it such a long way. Like, she is so good at the ball, with the ball at her feet. I mean, it almost reminds me of Vero a bit, but kind of more direct. Like, Vero had some had flair to her, and really, did she ever score for the Royals?
She did. Maybe she had one.
I think it might have just been one. It was never in Utah. I mean, I think she was such a fun player to watch. I definitely miss having her here. But yeah, Sintner is really good with the ball at her feet and just carries, and then knows exactly when to pull the trigger. She pulls it, you know, kind of top of the box, lets it fly, and it's just such a well taken shot that, historically, you haven't seen a ton of goals quite like that with this team. And winning, you know, getting that first goal off of a set piece header is great. That is an important skill to have. Always love a center back goal. Think that's super fun, probably because I got into soccer while Borchers and Olave were the center backs for Real Salt Lake. So seeing Del Fava do that is just a blast, but having a forward that can carry the ball and take a shot like that is just great stuff from the Royals, and does give me, I think I felt some pessimism after the home opener. It feels like it gives me a lot more hope for what this team has to build on. I think really the other big thing of note in the first half was Dorsey. Yeah, terrible moment. Like, she maybe makes kind of light contact. It might have been a no contact injury with Hopkins, but if they did, there was a coming together. It was super minimal, but just she immediately starts crying, and you know it's bad. Like, she was down for a long time. She was carried off the field by two trainers, and then stretchered into the locker room, which is just not a great, you just never want to see that. And the team did confirm that it was a ruptured Achilles. And that's a long road back. Like, that's probably season ending, right?
Yeah, that's season ending. And it sucks so much because she took last year off, right? Like, she made that very brave decision in the world we live in to take a year off for her mental health. Mm-hmm. So for her to come back and that to happen in the second game, like, that's just a really bummer situation.
Yeah.
And I'm really sad about that.
Yeah.
She has a lot of experience too, right? Like, in sort of the upper levels of players on this team who have a lot of NWSL experience, and she has quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
So that's a big piece. I don't know if it means they go and sign somebody. I think I'm probably more inclined to believe that with what the roster construction have shown us so far is that somebody else will step up, probably Addison Merrick, like we saw in that substitution, and probably the other players that were brought in. I don't know if that's like a Griffiths or a Zoe Burns or something like that, but I'd imagine that they'd probably look internally to sort of see what they have before they go and get somebody. But that's a hole that's going to need to be filled for sure.
Yeah. See, I'm thinking that they have to sign somebody. I don't.
Because of roster compliance?
Yeah.
I mean, if Dorsey, I'm not sure, but if she goes on like a season ending injury list, the roster would be 21 players, unless they upped it to 23. I guess I should.
Yeah, because didn't they sign? They signed. Oh my gosh.
We signed Griffiths. Yes. And Burns.
Yes, right, like within the past week or so. Yeah. But not only for numbers, I think. I mean, you look at the roster and it's just very. It's not, I mean, unless they're going to keep healthy, like, I'm like, what's going to happen when you get into, right now they've, I mean, two injuries for, I mean, they're injuries. I've been impressed just maybe because I've seen a lot of injuries in Kansas City, but I don't know. I think you would want somebody with more experience. But maybe that's something maybe down the line as the season progresses. But, I mean, I think, I mean, Addison Merrick is a good backup to have. She also was – she played in Kansas City, too, last year, and she did pretty well. So that's a good backup. It is a huge bummer for Dorsey. And, yeah, that's something you never want to hear and see. I'm like, ah, no, not season-ending injury. But, yeah, we wish
– which hasn't been confirmed, okay. But sounds likely.
Yeah, that's true.
It's
Achilles.
Yeah. I'm no doctor.
Didn't you watch Grey's Anatomy? That should have made you a doctor.
I told someone yesterday that I'd never seen an episode, and it's really funny that came out.
Have you seen Scrubs?
Oh, every episode, multiple times.
Yeah. Then you
half doctor.
Yeah, half doctor.
They brought back the royal throne, which I thought was super cool. I was really stoked to see that. Every time I see that, I always just see, like, Katie Stengel.
Yeah. She's the iconic player.
I love Katie Stengel. We had so much fun banter through the podcast Twitter account with her. She was great.
Who now plays for...
Never wanted to
come to the show. She never did. Do you guys think when Gotham comes and then she scores a goal, do you think she'll go to the throne?
That would actually be super funny and seems like something she might do.
Yeah. Definitely up her personality alley for sure.
Yeah.
Addison Merrick comes on, places Dorsey, and I thought had a pretty good game. It's hard to come in right before the end of the half like that, but it seems like she did well. And we'll have to wait and see if they bring anyone else in. So let's talk the pins, because that was just insane. I almost said the F word just then and I remembered we are on a family friendly podcast. Mm-hmm. And I don't talk like that as a parent. I'm just kidding. So two penalties back to back. I don't, other than a keeper coming off their line, I don't think I've ever seen that. Like, this is wild.
Can you guys, because I didn't watch the game because it was a Friday night and I'm too cool to watch soccer on a Friday night.
How dare you do things that aren't soccer?
I know, right? What breakdown of what happened for those of us?
Okay, so Nyberg fouls O'Sullivan in the box. It is a penalty. That is the right choice. So Berkeley steps up to take it. She has scored in the previous week. So obviously she's gonna step up. She hits the post, which, thank goodness. Although, how was diving that way? She might have had it covered. If it hadn't been so far out, I think she might have been able to get to it. I'm not totally sure. Good instinct. She went the right way, not one, but two times, which we'll get to in a moment. But she pushes it back out a little bit into traffic, not directly into traffic, but, you know, players are sprinting full speed. And I think, is it Merrick or someone fouls Sanchez?
Yeah, sure, it's Merrick. Yeah.
Merrick. Okay. So, you know, she's still early in her time on the field, and she takes out Sanchez, and another penalty is immediately awarded, which was very strange. Rewatching it, I was at the game, but you know, rewatching it, it sounded like they weren't even sure why a second penalty was awarded, if players were coming off like the line too soon to defend, if how it had come off her line. And then you can see it on the replay, like that is, she definitely takes her out. So it's the right call.
How dare they?
And then and then on that second penalty kick, it's Berkeley again, and she this time goes the other way. Hout reads it correctly and makes the save and kind of fumbles it for a half second and then collects it really quickly and is just stoked. Like she's shouting and like, big rah-rah moment. And they cut to A-Rod in the broadcast and she just kind of like nodding her head like, which is real fun to see. I would probably say neither penalties, definitely not the first one, are great from Berkeley, but I think both responses are good from our keeper. Like that was exciting. That was a solid performance.
Yeah. And there was a new goalkeeper for Utah this week, right? Because Mandy was suspended. Is that what that was?
Yeah, that was last week. So Carly Nelson.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what a way to step it up.
It would be interesting if they kind of continue to oscillate that. Mm-hmm. Or if it was just a question of, she's suspended, so Nelson is going to get the start, or did get the start in the first game. So
that's my impression, and I don't know why I think that. Like, no one has told me that, but I kind of get the sense that, it's sort of her spot.
Yeah, because we saw that with Smith and Barnhart, like, very, not super frequently, and I know a lot of it was injury-based. But, like, there was some, I don't want to say, like, it definitely wasn't performance-based, but there was, like, a small period where I think Laura Harvey was trying to, like, suss out, okay, like, who is going to be my starter. I think that
for a while, it was, like, solidly Abby.
Yeah.
And you thought, okay, this is sort of the passing of the baton. Mm-hmm. And then it went back.
Yeah.
I am very much looking forward to Gotham coming. I think that's one. That and Seattle are the two games I think I'm most looking forward to, just for the nostalgia, and those teams have a lot of Royals connections.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. Should we talk about the surrounding of the game, the attendance?
Yeah,
let's do it. I was told that the attendance numbers were 8,161, which is like 10 or 11,000 fewer fans and or fewer tickets distributed than the home opener. I don't know if that number, I would assume that that's tickets distributed. That is, if listeners aren't aware, there's a bit of controversy in that the attendance number is the number of tickets that are distributed. Not everyone loves that as a metric, because sometimes tickets are distributed for people who are not in attendance. And it does. Some would say that attending should be part of attendance numbers. I'm not going to say who, just some people have felt that way.
Everyone
not
feels
me.
That
I'm
way.
Not saying me. What?
I just said everyone feels that way.
I mean, the home opener being a sellout, that's great. I've seen that stadium way, way fuller. This game felt actually pretty. I recognize that that's not a super high number, 8,000, but it felt like the crowd was like engaged, and it felt pretty reminiscent of 2018-2019 Utah Royals numbers to me. But I am curious if that becomes a concern of like, oh, this is not, these are not the numbers we want. Like, I think everyone would love 15,000 fans every game. 8,000 is certainly not terrible, but I don't know. I mean, I'd rather have 18,000 super engaged fans than 18,000 that's said to be more than that, that is, and they're not super engaged. Mm-hmm. Granted, there's a lot more to cheer for in this game than the home opener, mm-hmm. so there is that as a factor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, given that the comparison is in those first 2 years pre-COVID, the numbers sort of hovered between 7K and 9K on average. So I'm okay with those numbers. Like, I think it's fine. And it's still, comparatively to the league, like, it's still very good. Chicago just set their home opener attendance record, and it was under 6,000. Oh. And that's a huge metropolitan. I'm pretty sure it was, like, 5,700 something in that ballpark. Maybe I'm off, but I feel pretty confident that I'm not. So, like, those are still good numbers. But, like, I think it kind of definitely is a testament to some of the, not really criticism, but commentary that we talked about last week of, like, how much of this is here to stay, how much of these tickets are people who are just, like, showing up because it's the first game. You know, are these people going to convert into diehards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. Like, I think it's very plausible that this number continues to go down if the team's bad. I hope not. But if the team is hovering around 8,000 for the rest of the season, like, I think that's a success. Like, I'm game for that.
Yeah. Sydney, sorry.
No, I said that's good. It kind of was expected, though, that there would be a significant drop. I mean, they can't hand out free tickets every game to, you know, everyone and their mom. So not surprising, but also does minimize that sellout record that supposedly was a sellout. So, yeah, I agree. I think if it's around the 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 mark, that's good. But yeah, the first game kind of just makes it seem like, cool, people were there, but they didn't come back. Come on, people.
I know, and it's like they missed out on the better game, which is really too bad. Yeah. Because you have to wonder, oh, that squirreling happens in front of a full stadium. How many of those people are more apt to come back? I mean, one thing that I do think is a huge positive is the Royals lost their first game. No one seemed upset about it. And I think that is actually a good thing because it shows that fans are willing to kind of invest in the team and the process rather than just demanding instant results. And I think results are important, but this is clearly a different approach. And I think that that's fine. It's just, I don't know, also maybe I'm operating a little bit in my bubble of the people I talk to are more apt to be in it for the long haul than the casual fan that got invited that Saturday and then was like, okay, that was a thing and don't really think about it again. But I know, so we had discussed marketing and I had a good conversation with someone at the team who I trust. And, you know, I was told that the budget for marketing for the Royals in 2024 is just significantly higher than 2018. The club as a whole has 84 billboards that go 24/7. And they're basically they're focused on advertising the next home game, whatever that is. And because the RSL was on the road for 2 weeks, it was all Royals for two solid weeks. So that's good. Like I didn't see no billboards like stuck in my mind that I had seen for the Royals, but I know some people that did see them. 84 seems like a lot across the state. I really don't know anything about roadside advertising. Other than I'm not a fan, but I understand it exists and it's an effective way to advertise. But basically 84 billboards kind of advertising for the home game, for the home opener, the second home game, kind of 24/7. And that's definitely significant. And another point that like I had talked about was how much having no major stars and this team affects some of the hype. I think this is exactly my story, but the national team is a super easy pathway into the league. But if your team doesn't have any national team, your club team, local club team doesn't have any national team regulars, it's a lot harder to make that connection. How much does that affect it? And I know for me, like in 2018, social media was like fun and a really engaging community. And now it just feels like a hellscape that is awful that I still deal with some because it can be an effective communication tool, but it definitely changes my like periphery and how I feel like, oh, there's a lot of people talking about a lot of positive engagement around the Royals. Versus in 2018, that probably existed a bit more. I don't know. I've just been rambling a long time. Do you guys have thoughts or feelings?
I also did not see the billboards. Like, I'm glad they're there. It's great. You know, women's sports needs people who are willing to invest mm-hmm. in it because it is a good product. It is an awesome product. And it has historically been very neglected by advertisers. Mm-hmm. So I do think that's very good.
Yeah. I also haven't seen them.
No way! Well, you need to
spend more time on I-15.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree that definitely needs to put more investment. Not just beyond billboards. I don't know. I guess it seems like what do you guys mean by the marketing? Is it just what is it that you guys would like to see more the team doing?
I don't know. I felt like even when they left in 2020, like I would see billboards or ads around like downtown or City Creek. I mean, it is funny if you still go into City Creek to this day, City Creek Mall, there's a food court with a kind of indoor play structure that is an RSL propaganda project that I kind of love because it's like got a huge backdrop of the stadium and all these toys that are like RSL and Utah Royals themed. Like there's the old Utah Royals logo all over it. It's really funny that at some point, I don't know if that would have been like a Deloitte decision. It's a weird decision. I love it. I don't know if that would have ever been in his radar, but someone's like, yeah, we need to spend big money on like a McDonald's style indoor play place, but soccer themed. And it needs to be at the downtown mall.
Sounds like my kind of play place.
I know. I'm excited for my kid to be old enough to take her there because I just want to take pictures of her playing with the RSL propaganda.
Propaganda. Oh, man. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know what is effective marketing.
So here's what sports. Here's what I like to see them do, and they're never going to do this. So Atalanta in Europe, whenever a child is born, what they do is they send that child a baby-sized jersey of the team to guarantee that that person will be a fan of the team for life.
Yeah,
and I understand that that is not cost effective, but I think that'd be super awesome.
That happened to me, but that might be because I know someone who worked in that.
Well, so they like deliver it, like they just have storage at the hospital. It's like, oh, you had a kid? Here you go. Here's your jersey for your
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I know some people who feel like there has been a disconnect, and kind of feel like unwanted by the club and by the club's marketing because they were previous season ticket holders and no one reached out to them. I'm not going to mention names, but I know that that is a source of frustration for more than one person. Hmm. I also have not, like Lucas said, seen the billboards. I don't know. I think the marketing funnel for them is really, like, that's going to really kind of be proven in the dog days of summer. Mm. Just to sort of see how they advertise it, what needs to be advertised. But, like, I really would love for them to do, no matter what, to try to keep those numbers around, like, 7,000 to 9,000. I think that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's worth noting that I am pretty confident that the first two or three games at Rio Tinto Stadium with the first iteration of the team, I'm pretty sure those were all above 15,000. At least the first two games for sure. So definitely is a drop off. Obviously, it's not apples to oranges at all, but maybe still worth noting a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. It feels like it was a slower taper down. Like, I think the attendance in 2018 was probably better than in 2019. And then in 2020, it just took a real nosedive.
Did something happen in 2020?
Not that I can remember.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I can't
think. I've repressed that year. Laura Harvey left.
Mm. Yes.
Did Becky Sauerbrunn, actually. That's probably why people stopped coming, because of Becky.
Yeah.
That's why Cindy stopped coming. She can go to any games.
Well, Lucas, you made a great point earlier that major stars are the pathway. And we kind of talked about this a little bit more in depth in the last episode, or maybe it was the first episode, of us being back. Don't go all the way back to episode one. You don't want to hear it.
No.
Of this iteration where we kind of touched on, like, yeah, not having that major star, that person that someone can psychologically latch onto is important.
I did also feel, though, it just seemed like there was more, I don't know, exposure or connection to the team. Like, I feel like I'd never heard of, like, Gunny before she joined the Royals, and I felt like you kind of got to know her through social media posts or, like, Kitty Stengel or whoever that wasn't a big household name. And I don't know. It does feel like this – things have just been played – like, cards have been played a little closer to the chest this time around.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's intentional. I don't know if it's because I'm just so much older and tireder than I was in 2018. It could be a combination. It could be purely one over the other. I don't know. Let's – are you guys okay talking about – some new league endeavors for the summer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's chat about it.
All right. I don't know anything about this, but Cindy, I feel like you're our resident league expert.
Yeah, sometimes. So basically more games in the summer for all 14 NWSL teams, the NWSL and Liga MX Femenil, which is the Mexican League, the women's league, that has done fairly well. So partnership for some games this upcoming summer. And so it's going to be called the first ever NWSL Liga MX Femenil Summer Cup. Yeah. So 14 NWSL teams, 6 teams with the most points achieved in the Liga Femenil Clausura and Apertura during 2023, which includes Tigres, Club America, Chivas de Guadalajara, Rayadas de Monterrey, Pachuca, and Tijuana. It's going to kick off July 19th. It's going to be 33 games, 30 group stage contest, and then 4 team semifinal rounds, which begin August 4th. Championship match will take place the weekend of October 25th. 27th. 5 groups, four groups of three NWSL clubs and one Liga Feminine club, and one group with two clubs from each league. And so there'll be a minimum of three games. And then if you don't, I mean, there's a chance that you win your group and not make get to the next round, which is the wild thing. So, really? Yeah.
Ooh, that's cool.
It's very cruel. That was like, oh, so five teams and only, what is it, semifinal? So four teams, I think. One, two, three, four, five. Something like that. So it's interesting because the past few seasons, we've had the Challenge Cup. You guys remember the Challenge Cup from the old 2020 days. That was standalone, the only competition in the NWSL that year. And then it got integrated into the season, the next couple of seasons, 2021. But then everybody kind of was like Challenge Cupped out. And so this year, last year was the last year that it was like a part of like the season. Because then people were like, I kind of tried to be like a U.S. Open Cup model, but not really.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't working, I don't think. Players, there were just too many games. Teams were feeling stretched, injuries. It was fun from a perspective that the winning team got like $1 million of something like that. So that was cool. But then I'm like, not really worth it. So it's kind of funny that they were interesting, not funny, but interesting that they are introducing another set of games that are have nothing to do with the season itself. But I mean, I think it's cool to have some kind of partnership competition with the Mexican League. That's important, especially as the women's game continues to grow. And we always talk about the NWSL being like one of the best leagues in the world. So here's a chance to put it against an up-and-coming league too. So exciting from that sense, but also more games. And it's not going to be to the extent of what the Challenge Cup was, but there were so many games throughout the season. You know, the most a team is going to play is five. So three at the minimum. So that's good. Not sure how hype it's going to be or how teams are going to see it as. Maybe it just gives opportunities for players that don't really get to be starters during the season, which for Utah, it's all of them because it's a little teeny tiny team. Have you guys heard anything from the Utah side as far as Lucas, have you asked any questions on this?
I haven't, but you know, Coach Rodriguez was asked about it in the post-match after the game. And I think she kind of, you know, said like they're looking forward to them, you know. These competitions are exciting, but I think she did kind of call them exhibition games, which I think is a bit of a statement, and maybe hopefully I'm not misquoting there. And she kind of said she hadn't thought about them very much, that, you know, it was announced that week, and the forefront to her mind, very much the NWSL games they have coming up. Mm-hmm. So something that they're going to explore and delve into later. But I mean, it is interesting that their group is there with Seattle, Portland, and Tijuana. Is that right? So I guess I feel like I'm still familiar with Seattle and Portland. Obviously those relationships have changed drastically in 3 years. But they should have faced both of those teams. Tijuana will certainly be interesting. Like, I think it's really fun that we get to see some more of these Liga MX Femenil teams, because that is a league that is growing and is improving, and more players are choosing to play there. So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Like, it'll be fun to see these get different looks for these teams. It doesn't feel completely dissimilar to, like, Leagues Cup on the MLS side, and it's just, our team's going to take this seriously, or is this, kind of just exhibition games?
Yeah. So Utah actually kicks off the Summer Cup on Friday, July 19th at Lumen Field against Seattle. That's a 9 p.m. game, so that's exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah.
And I believe part of it happens, at least the first couple of stage games, happens during the Olympic Games. When is Paris 2024?
It's in the
summer. Okay. Friday, July 26th through Sunday, August 11th. So, I mean, the national team players will probably be gone.
That's not a problem we have to deal with. Maybe we'll win this thing.
Hey, Utah 2024 for Summer Cup champions.
It's going to happen. Bookmark it. First show's gone. We can just make all the predictions. Yeah. Bookmark all the things. Mm-hmm. So on that note, Royals have their first away game. This is going to be wild. Woo! Watch them on the dang TV. I will say, watching the replay for this past game on NWSL Plus, so much easier than all the I spent thousands of hours looking for a replay on ION. I could never get it. So this was much simpler, and that's great. And I do know that the game against Chicago did eventually show up on NWSL Plus, but felt a lot more seamless this time around. So yeah, I think, is that where this, I should know this going into this, is that the Washington Spirit game, is that going to be through NWSL Plus? Do you know? Okay, good. So that's nice and easy. Yeah, download it. Don't worry about it. It's pretty chill. I would say, if you've gone to both games in person and you haven't figured out the NWSL Plus app, take a few minutes and over the next couple days, figure it out, get it set up. So like me, the moment it happens, you're not scrambling to try to get it to work, because I have done that with other teams and other seasons, and take a few minutes, set it up beforehand. There you go. Yeah, Washington Spirit, they're coming off of what to me felt like, much like the Royals, a bit of a surprise win. They beat Bay City FC 2-1. I feel like Washington Spirit. Oh,
could you try again?
My apologies. My watch always thinks I'm talking to it, and I have never spoken to my watch. I feel like Washington Spirit is a team that's not super high on a lot of people's lists. What are your perspective on them as a team, Cindy?
On the spirit. Yeah, you know, Washington Spirit won the 2021 NWSL Championship. So that was cool.
They were fun that year.
And a lot of their players are gone now. I mean, Kelly O'Hara is with Gotham. Ashley Sanchez is with North Carolina. I was like, I feel like I just heard her name.
She got fouled in the box.
Who else they got? They have some pretty fun and exciting players. A lot of national team level players. Andy Sullivan, Casey Kruger, Hatch, Utah native.
Not Utah native, but
oh, you're right.
Arizona. I think
BYU. But
because she went to BYU, and therefore is just absolutely beloved.
Of course.
I mean, as an aside, I have never seen so much BYU gear at a non-BYU event as I did at the Royals game on Friday. It's fine. A lot of BYU connections.
BYU Pro FC. Just kidding. That's right. She is from Arizona, but she went to BYU, so technically adopted as Utah. And then Trinity Rodman, has been a young, up-and-coming, really good forward national team level player. So, yeah, I think we're not going to make predictions anymore because we were wrong last time, but yeah.
Well, I was most right, and I think that we should have known
you
that.
Were. No, you weren't.
I said they would win. I was the only one who said that, just to be contrary.
Yeah. So, I mean, Spirit are beatable, but, you know, it's so early in the season. I feel like we really haven't seen enough of teams to be like, oh, yeah, they're so good. They're going to win the league. So, I would definitely say Utah can win this. It's an away game, so this is the first time we see this young and talented but inexperienced and yet full of heart youngins on the road. I was going to say, Virgil, any thoughts on the Spirit?
Oh, sorry. Sorry,
that's
sorry.
That's where we're at.
I'm feeling kind of a tie, which I'll take. I don't know. Feeling kind of like a 1-1, 2-2.
Yeah.
I could see that. I feel like Bedford is due her first goal of the season. I think she could score in this game. It's a wildly bold prediction to say a center forward might get a goal, but I'm going to go on a limb and say it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be fun. It'll be fun to see them on the road, see what they're able to come up with in a different environment, away from their fans. They've had good support. But other than a different environment, I bet we see a really similar, if not the exact same, well, not starting 11 because of Dorsey, but with Merrick in that spot, I think we're likely to see the same 11. I think they did a good job. No one on that squad stuck out to me as particularly bad. I think they all played well. I do wish we had gotten to talking about Ife and Mozingo coming in and what they brought to the game, because it felt like they had a bit of a spark. But, you know, we'll probably get to see them more soon. And yeah, so that is on Sunday. So keep an eye out for that one. And then we will recap the following week. But Rucho, Cindy, any thoughts to close us out?
I, for some reason, I thought that was a Saturday game, but it is, you're right, Sunday, 11 a.m. too. That's an early one.
Really?
Yeah. Early. That's early.
I'm not going to watch it live. It's like on Easter. Yeah. Night. 11 a.m. on Easter is a rough time slot.
It's kind of weird.
And, you know, following in tradition, I will be skiing in Logan.
Wow. Look at you.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not a tradition. I've never done that on Easter. So,
that's all I got.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week to recap the game against the Washington Spirit and preview the next game. Thanks.